Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I spoke on Thursday. Gary Parrish was here. If you're listening and you're not watching on YouTube, well, first of all, shame on you. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Smash the like button like you're... You know how it goes here. Kyle Boone is with me. And so we did a pod on Thursday. And Gary Parrish and his lovely wife are out away from Memphis right now celebrating New Year's Eve. And I, the next morning I called him up. I was like, you know, GP, like, why don't you just go and celebrate this with the love of your life? You know, you don't need to be worried about getting locked in on FAU, Florida Gulf Coast. I didn't use that game. But I said, you know what? Go ahead. Take it easy. KB can cover. He said, you know what? New Orleans sounds good. So we then decided to pivot back to our original plan, Saturday Night Pod. So Kyle Boone is here with me. And after, listen, we had an Alligator Alley upset. There's some crises developing in the Pacific Northwest. A meaningful showdown in Milwaukee. A bucket full of bat losses across the country. And some leagues are turning the calendar to January with some real reason for concern. So we got a lot to get to on Saturday. We were not going to let you wait until Sunday. If you're listening on New Year's Eve, hey, look at that. You got a podcast waiting for you overnight in your phone, ready to go long before you dive into your NYE festivities. Kyle Boone is back on the show.
What up?
And he's a changed man since he was last on the show. So we are going to get into FAU losing to Dunk City in just a second. But first, KB. Great to have you back here. When were you last on, and what has happened since you were last on this podcast?
Yeah, it's been a hot minute since I've been on the show, probably a couple months. But yeah, we a life change in our family. We've actually made a schematic move as a family. We've gone from the zone defense to playing man to man, growing our family from one kid to two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta admit, Matt Norlander.
Yeah.
I now understand why Jim Boeheim never moved off his position of playing strictly zone defense. It is much, much easier. Two kids is like a lot more challenging than one, but it's been great. Got an IVF baby, success. He's good. Mama's good. It's been a very joyful holiday season. So yeah, I hope everyone else is enjoying the holidays as much as we have.
Congratulations, buddy. In a public forum, I've obviously shared my well wishes with you privately. What'd you name the little guy, by the way?
Brooks Alexander. And actually, maybe the last time I was on the podcast, I think I promised the audience if Rory McIlroy won the PGA Championship?
Something like that, yeah.
That we would name our little boy Rory. That was not the case. He did not win. So Brooks ended up winning out. So Brooks Alexander Boone ended up being the name.
Well, that's tremendous stuff, and congratulations to you and your family. You're now a family of four. You haven't seen anything yet, so cherish these moments and days, as I know you will. It gets only more chaotic, but also more fun. Santa dropped off a Nerf hoop for my little guys, and we'd actually never set one up prior to 5 days ago. But it was like it's I don't know, a pretty legitimate Nerf hoop. You know, it's got a metal rim, and we put it up in our deck. What I'm getting at here is they're only going to become more active, and it's only going to make your house crazier. And so now I didn't put it in their bedrooms because the shape of their rooms, like they're normal size rooms, I guess, but where the doors are placed didn't make for the best possible angle. However, in our sunken den, the ceiling happens to be, I don't know, 12, 14 feet. So we put it above the door. And so for the past 5 days, they've been getting their shots up. I've also been getting my swats in, though. Let's be clear on this.
Good. Good.
I've been getting my swats in with regularity, and congratulations to you and your family. But that's coming down the road in a couple of years here. So
can't wait. It's already pretty loud here. So,
yes. By the way, you're opting in on a podcast on a Saturday night when I know sleep hours are coming at all random times there. So my appreciation to you, but even more to your beautiful, lovely wife. Let's get into the hoops here. FAU blew up the entire rundown. So we decided earlier on Saturday, we were going to do this on Saturday night and plan to do it, you know, in this general hour. And then FAU scooting across the state, going and playing Dunk City. Oh my. Dunk City wins. Florida Gulf Coast wins this by 4, 72-68. It's one of the five most surprising outcomes of the season, and FAU already has another one in the top five, Kyle Boone. Consider this. Pat Chambers is now the coach at Florida Gulf Coast, former Penn State coach. His team had only won two games against Division I opponents prior to this. Beaten FIU, five games under 500 at this point, and Georgia Southern with one win to its name. The other victories, Dunk City's coming off an OT win against Florida Memorial, my man, NAIA school. Okay. Also beat something called the New College of Florida. That's not it. You know what the other win for this team is? You know what? My board's been acting up here. I got it on my phone. You ready? What's the other win for Florida Gulf Coast? They lost to a Lord's Prayer. They beat a Lord's Prayer. That's it. FAU was 4 of 20 in this game from three-point range. Had plenty of opportunities down the stretch from beyond the arc. Elijah Martin only had 8 points, KB. Credit to Dunk City, Zach Anderson. He had some chin music with a couple of big-time threes that prevented Dusty May's team from taking the lead. They had tied the game, and then Anderson hit one, and I think it was on the next possession. He hit another one there. The Owls are now 6-1 in quad one and quad two, but they have got two quad four losses. What are your thoughts on whatever transpired over there on the Gulf Coast on Saturday night?
Disgusting. I was actually prepared to make my triumphant return to the podcast with some owl noises, maybe a come from behind wind from Florida Atlantic, but no. Florida Gulf Coast, 17.5 point underdog, gets the win by 4 points. An ugly, 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 ugly loss for FAU, as Jeff Borzello, of course, from ESPN noted. Second loss for FAU this season to a quad four team, which, of course, only team in the top 30 of the net to qualify for such a hideous qualification. And as you noted, Florida Gulf Coast a week ago had to make a buzzer-beating three-pointer to escape an NAIA team. So Elijah Martin missed 11 of his 14 shot attempts. FAU went 16 of 27 from the free throw line. They missed 16 of their 23-point attempts. And Florida Gulf Coast, that arena was rocking there. It felt like they were going to hold on. So it was a weird game. Like, Florida Gulf Coast kind of jumped on them early. Florida Atlantic kind of tried to make a run, but they couldn't get out of their own way. Too many turnovers, too many missed free throws. Just an ugly performance. And we've seen some really high highs from this Florida Atlantic team. You could look at their resume. I mean, this is a team that just a week ago beat Arizona in double overtime. And they beat, you know, Butler and Texas A&M, some other teams. Pretty good resume, but for Florida Atlantic, a team that's probably not going to have a lot of chances to really bolster its resume, Norlander, not great.
It'll have at least three quad one opportunities in league play, because both Memphis games probably will be quad ones, but even if not, they're going to be on the road against teams that are a road game, top 75 in the net. You're a quad one opponent there. So they're going to have at least three. Realistically, by the time we get to the end of the American Athletic Conference tournament, it's conceivable that FAU might have as many as six quad ones before we get to the end of it, but we got to see how that league shakes out there. All neutral sites are top 50 against the net. Think about the game and then a big picture thing on FAU. You know, Dunk City only went to the line eight times, went 5 of 8 from the foul line. FAU took 27 trips to the stripe. Now, only hit 16 of those, 59% from the foul line. That's going to get you. They shot well from the interior. Vlad Golden had some opportunities there. And I thought that they were going to pull it off. Like they had composure. They came back. They came back from, what was the biggest deficit in this game? It was 39-26 in the first half. And then Gulf Coast had it double digits for a while there in the second half, but they roared back. Looked like a great environment there, but man, what a bizarre loss. So FAU right now has wins, good wins against Butler and A&M. They have Virginia Tech on a neutral. That's not aging well, not their fault, but just it's not that good. Loyola Chicago hasn't been as good as some thought it would be in the preseason. The Charleston one is whatever, not going to do much for you. The Bonnies win, we'll see. We'll see what the Bonnies can do in the A-10. And then they've got the Arizona win. See, I think the Arizona, we'll see how this goes for FAU. I'm not going to have one game suddenly like twist my entire perspective on the team, but come on, man. Lose at home to Bryant by 9, and then you just toss away this game, your final non-con game after the outstanding double OT win over Arizona. The Arizona win might wind up being so valuable that if, like, listen, I see the Owls losing to Bryant and FGCU. You can't tell me they're not getting picked off here 3 or 4 times in league play. Mm. You know, if they're not going, they're going to have to tap into the team they were a season ago to avoid that from happening, KB. And if they don't, the Arizona win might actually carry so much value that it keeps them in the tournament. Like, if FAU really messes around and takes on 4 or 5 losses in league play, then we're going to have an interesting conversation. But we're not there yet. They're going to open up league play at home against East Carolina. Then they've got at Charlotte, at Tulane, a couple of home games. We'll see how it all pans out. But, oh boy, what a downer. And this is just days removed from me proclaiming FAU was the team of 2023. I gave them a finalized record thinking that they were going to win against Florida Gulf Coast. That's how a road game can trip you up there. Any other thoughts on FAU or the game?
No. I think that that pretty much sums it up. You look at KenPom's page, actually, they are projected to win all but one of their remaining regular season games. That lone loss projected February 25th, that is on the road at Memphis. I would imagine this team stumbles up multiple times on the road. The American Athletic Conference this year looks pretty wide open. And honestly, not very impressive, but still just the way that Florida Atlantic has been just a total roller coaster so far this season. I hope we could see more of this team playing like it did against Arizona. But the more we see from this team, I think more we see that they're going to be kind of inconsistent, and that is that's a bummer. That's a bummer for the Owls.
Yeah, there's some chatter in the chat right now about FAU's long term tournament chances. I think they're going to get in, but if they make it interesting. Quad 4 losses are anvils. 1 is 2 is another thing altogether. I don't want to say these things offset each other, but maybe if, as far as the committee is concerned, maybe it will once we get to March. The win over Arizona on a neutral, provided that Arizona wins the Pac-12 going away, a Pac-12 that we'll get to later on the show, by the way, it's going to be pretty, pretty intriguing. Plenty more to get to, including what San Diego State was able to do on Friday night. And we had a big one on CBS go down on Saturday afternoon in Milwaukee. We are going to get to that one next and talk about what Marquette was able to do as it came back from Creighton. But first, Nada, let's take a quick break.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So the best game on Saturday was the one between two ranked teams. Creighton traveling up to play against Marquette in Milwaukee. And I tell you what, MU got off to a skittish start here. It saved its bacon in the second half. Had 44 second half points. Only put up 28 on the board in the first half. Marquette did shock his team. Shot 6 of 11 from 3-point range in the second 20 after missing, I think it was 17 three-pointers in the first 20 minutes. Credit to the defense. And Marquette was able to get 24 points off turnovers. They had 18 second chance points. Oso Ighodaro, he came up big on the boards here. He had a season high 16 rebounds and he came up big. But Sean Jones is the guy. I mean, Sean Jones had a career high 15 points. He had three triples. He matched Tyler Kolek, who also had 15. Stevie Mitchell returned to the starting lineup, which was important as well. Thoughts, Mr. Boone, on what Marquette was able to do at home. And also, by the way, giving Creighton its first 0-2 start in the Big East since the 2014-15 season.
Yeah, Marquette's defense looked terrific in this game, and I thought they were more aggressive when it really mattered. They had 18 offensive rebounds. Sean Jones, as you mentioned, career high 15 points in the win. Cam Jones just went 2 of 9 from three, 5 of 14 shooting overall. That's, as Shaka Smart said after the game, that is Marquette's best shooter. And to survive a win against a really good Creighton team, with your best shooter really struggling on the day. Credit to Marquette. I mean, the way that they played, they were very aggressive. They were very physical. I thought Creighton looked a little bit soft. Was kind of surprised with the way that kind of they just handed the game down the stretch. But this was a really impressive performance from Marquette. Sean Jones, terrific. This defense looks outstanding. Marquette continues to make me look like a dodo bird because this is one of the most fun teams in college basketball. I really thought that they would take a step back this season, but they look really good. They now have wins over Illinois, Kansas, UCLA, Texas, and Creighton. And yeah, to me, this is one of the best teams in the Big East.
Yeah, I thought Marquette getting this win reaffirmed its credibility as a top 10 team in the country. Now I had them number 2 going into the season. And I still think there's a chance they could work their way into that conversation. And I still consider them to be a Final Four contender, but getting this win, I thought was important to that overall push and building the story that they're working toward over a 5-month period here. If you watch the game, it's undeniable how important Sean Jones was. He was a spark plug and he came in and just, to me, he altered the trajectory of this ending. And I think that's a very important development for Marquette because performances like that, when you know how this team is built and you know how Shaka and that staff like to get consistency in the way that they win, but with a little bit of variety in the genre and how they do it on a week by week basis, having Jones come in and knowing that you can rely on him, that it doesn't have to be Cam Jones, right? It doesn't have to be Tyler Kolek. Ighodaro is a good player, but he's just not an every game player. He has not proven to be that to this point. Marquette also tied a Big East record. They've now won 20 straight league games at home. They will set the new record, and this is not the new Big East. This is the entire Big East history. They will set a new league record if they can beat Butler at home on January 10. Marquette is 1-1 in the league, 11-3 overall. Creighton is now 3-4 against the top two quadrants, has lost 3 of its past 4. It will drop out of the AP Top 25 when the polls refresh on Monday, almost certainly. In my opinion, it should. And that's fine. We'll see. GP brought up the question on our most recent show, where he said, are we sure if Creighton's any good? He was saying that from a resume perspective, and I think more than a team building perspective. I do think Creighton's good. Yeah. Here's my criticism is this, and I spoke about this on HQ on Saturday. Baylor Shireman is becoming an every game player. If not, he's already there. I mean, he had 23 points, a personal best 7 threes in this game. Trey Alexander had some good production, although he biffed like this breakaway layup that I thought was a key transition moment that they didn't get. He also got called for a charge, which in real time I thought was the right call, but on second thought, I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's not why they lost the game. My thing is this: Ryan Kalkbrenner, 8 points, 3 rebounds, got to be more consistent. Kalkbrenner has to be top 5 player in the Big East if Creighton is going to win the league and have a Final Four chance. And he just wasn't that today. Some of it was just him being off. Some of it was the scouting that Marquette did, and Marquette does a really, really good job. I actually thought Creighton was able to get some successful parts off the scouting report done, KB, but Kalkbrenner just has to be more consistent. Just straight up has to be more consistent than he has been. If he's not, that's a major problem for Creighton, and it takes him out of that top 20, top 25 conversation.
For sure. And I think, go back last year, maybe 2 years ago, we looked at Creighton when Kalkbrenner missed some time, and it was the splits between when Kalkbrenner played and when he was injured and not playing were wild. Like, Creighton is clearly a better team when Kalkbrenner is playing, but the Kalkbrenner that we saw today is not really the game-changing one that we have come to expect. So maybe we have too high expectations, but he is a real defensive game changer when he is dialed in, when he's locked in. Just the way that Marquette was kind of able to mitigate his impact on this game, I thought was really impressive. I still think that Creighton, you know, has a really good team. I like Trey Alexander. I really like Kalkbrenner. I think the core of that team, that is a team that is really built to make a run. But yeah, the Creighton that we saw today, not very impressive. And I think it's more probably a testament to Marquette, just the way that they played, but also came away not very impressed with what I saw from Creighton.
Marquette gets a week off. They're going to play at Seton Hall next weekend. We'll see how they show up for that one. Creighton doesn't have as long of a layoff. They're going to play Tuesday night against Georgetown. And from, you know, if you're removed from the program, you look at that and say, okay, well, you know, they should win that. But if you're a fan of it, if you're involved in it, that now carries like a lot of urgency. Like, you're going on the road to play Georgetown. Don't slip up and miss that one. That would certainly be problematic. Let's go to Friday night. Let's talk San Diego State Gonzaga. Aztecs won 84-74. This was only the fourth meeting ever, by the way, between these two teams. And these are two of the five most prominent programs west of the Rockies in the past 20 years. So we don't get this as frequently as I think that we should. But was glad to get it. An interesting game. San Diego State controlled most of it. This was only Gonzaga's... KB, this was only the 17th time Gonzaga has lost in the new kennel. 272 wins to 17 losses. And it had gone 173 straight games at home without a double-digit loss. SDSU put an end to that. Reese Waters at 22. Missed his first foul shot of the year. He's at like 98% or something for the year right now. It's 97% with one missed free throw. Jaden Ledee had 20. I mentioned it on the Thursday show. Just one of the breakout stars of the season. He gets to the foul line. He's a terrific rebounder. He defends. He's averaging, 21 points, 9.5 boards. Came up big again. Your thoughts on... Take it however you want, but your thoughts on Aztecs, Bulldogs, and what you saw transpire there with Gonzaga now being a 9-4 team.
Yeah, it's jarring to see Gonzaga just look like a regular WCC team, and maybe it should have not been quite as surprising. I mean, this is a team that lost Drew Timmy, they lost Julian Strother, Rasir Bolton. It's got to sting a little bit that Hunter Salas is balling the heck out at Wake Forest. Steele Venters, the season-ending injury just before the season, was doing some kind of digging. Zags have actually been one of the best two-point shooting teams the last decade or so. I think you actually wrote a story about this a few years ago. Been around top 50 in three-point percentage the last few years. They're outside the top 50 in two-point percentage. Of course, that's helped because no Drew Timmy. Mm-hmm. But they rank 240th nationally in three-point shooting percentage. So their offense has not been nearly as lethal. Probably expected when you lose Drew Timmy and Julian Strother and some of those guys. But yeah, just this team has not completely clicked in the way that maybe a lot of people expected it would. And feels like the WCC is kind of wide open.
Yeah, and they've had other injury issues as well. They don't have depth. That's a problem. Quick on the Aztecs, and I want to focus in here on Gonzaga because they're the more urgent story of the moment. But tell you what, the Techs, 11-2, losses at BYU and Grand Canyon. This was a resume game. They got it. It should almost certainly be a quad one. I can't see Gonzaga dropping out of the top 75 here. No. The previous best wins for Brian Dutcher's team were over St. Mary's and Washington, and those were both neutral floor wins. So this is the best win of the season so far, and it's emblematic of the Mountain West. I plan on having more on this in the court report later this week. But between SDSU, Colorado State, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah State, you know, they all have 11 or more wins right now. That is I mean, that feels like it's going to be a four-bid league at least, and that's a good development for the Mountain West. Meantime, WCC, I think it's looking at being a one-bid league after this result. It's 11th right now in overall league strength at KenPom. Gonzaga, with a 9-4 record, does not have a quad one win, nor a top 45 KenPom win. Might not have a top 50 KenPom win after that refreshes overnight. We'll have to wait and see on that. St. Mary's is 9-6 and won't have an it will not have an at-large resume unless it peels off a 12-game win streak in the WCC, and then we can maybe start having that conversation. San Francisco is the highest team in the net in the WCC. It's 10-4. It's got three high major wins, but they're against bad teams. Those high major wins are Vandy, DePaul, and Minnesota. That's just not going to get it done. Gonzaga needs to win at Kentucky in February to up its at-large resume. I personally am staunchly against having bubble talk in January, let alone December. February 1, let's start going with it. But I understand sometimes the news cycle and the way the sport is gone, people want to get there early. The bubble fluctuates so much that to even have this conversation now, to me, is a bit silly. But with that being said, KB, Gonzaga has a lot of work to do. I think there's a 75% chance the WCC is a one-bid league this season, and the only way that it's not a one-bid league is if Gonzaga gets a ton of league play, wins at Kentucky, and can turn this around. The last happened was 2018, was the last time the WCC was a one-bid league, and it's only happened two times in the past 12 seasons where it has finished up as only worthy of one bid in that conference. I got one more for you. Zags right now 29th at KenPom. It went into the game 20th at KenPom on Friday night. It hadn't been that low in KenPom going into the game, not after, going in 6+ years. It has not been ranked 30th or worse at KenPom since March of 2016. Wow. So yeah, Mark Few just might have an okay team this season. They got taken at home by San Diego State, and we'll see how he adjusts. You know, they're about to have a real adjustment in game by game play with the WCC, but yeah, I think there's reason for some concern there with that league.
Yeah, for sure. I still think Gonzaga is a tournament team. I believe St. Mary's is a tournament team, although they have just been.
Well, they don't have the record to show. There's no the record isn't close to tournament worthy right now. Like, they could win in the tournament, KB, yes, but I mean, you can't defend the record at this point.
No, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I believe that they have the talent to be a tournament team, but their record is abysmal. I mean, they opened the season 3-5. They kind of turned things around a little bit, but basically it feels like they would probably need to run the WCC tournament to get that over it. So yeah, it's pretty ugly for the WCC, and it feels like Gonzaga, just because they have been such a dominant force, has kind of propped up that league for a long time. But it's a down year, it feels like, for Gonzaga, down year, it feels like, for St. Mary's. You know, maybe we get San Francisco making a little run here and kind of propping this league up. But it's kind of ugly all the way around right now.
It is. And the thread here with the two games in the segment is that Creighton's not as good without Ryan Nemhard, and Ryan Nemhard isn't as good without Creighton. Maybe that changes moving forward, but sometimes we see a transfer situation where both ends get the better of it. Sometimes it's one versus the other, the school or the player. Here, it's not going so well. We'll see if that can change. We got one more break coming up, and then we're going to do a weekend whip around. Some more bad losses. There is a poll ongoing, by the way. If you're in the YouTube chat and you haven't voted, please do, and we'll give you the updates on that before the show ends. But first, Nada, partners, I think I need a word.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there
there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, so we've had, I wouldn't say a noisy weekend, but a notable one for sure. This was a, this is okay. We had this mix, this mix mash of league games and then teams finishing up non-con play. To me, the biggest result, the most eye-opening one, it is tied into our poll question, Notre Dame 76, Virginia 54. This, it's got to be something of a jaw-dropper here. Now, it was at Notre Dame, but come on. Per the esteemed David Teal, who has covered Virginia area hoops for an epoch here, it's the first season since 2010-11 that Virginia has lost three games by 20-plus points. And guess what? Season's not even half over yet. This is a Notre Dame team, Kyle, that was without a compass for much of the season. You may have even actually seen after the team's recent loss to the Citadel, Micah Shrewsbury had some choice words. Nada has the video. If you did not see or hear it, check this out, and then we'll continue with the results from this game.
First of all, I apologize to anybody that paid money to come watch that effort from that team. This game was over before we even got here. We have no energy to shoot around. We didn't have any energy at practice. That's who this team has been. And then our emotional intelligence is not very good. We don't handle failure well at all. When failure happens, we collapse, right? So that's on me as a coach. I got to find a way for us to be better. It doesn't matter who you play. Everybody can beat you. And we wilted right away. But that, again, that starts with me. I got to change my approach. But if people don't compete, then you're going to see more walk-ons. A lot more earlier than this, because we're building a culture, and that ain't it. That is not the culture we're trying to build. So a message needs to be sent to some of these guys that, like, if you don't play hard, then you can sit and rot over there on the bench, and I'll find a way. I'll go and talk to the people in compliance, and I will help you transfer, because this culture is getting built the right way, and if you ain't a part of it, you're out, and I don't care.
That was Micah Shrewsbury, Notre Dame's coach, on December 19th, 11 days ago. They followed it up 3 days later with just a four-point home win over Marist. And then message received on Saturday with a 76-54 whooping of Virginia. Thoughts, Kyle Boone?
Hey, you got a contractor at the ready. I mean, I'm ready to destroy this wall in front of me. Run through it for Micah.
Yeah, I love when coaches are willing to speak truth to results and not sugarcoat it. While at the same time, like, you're going to hold your players accountable, man. That's who Shrews is. He's highly respected.
That was incredible. You can sit and rot on the bench. I mean, that was not said tongue in cheek. He was mad. Very impressive. Notre Dame lost to the Citadel 65-45. That was on December 19th. Went off. Talked about the culture. Very, very impressive bounce back. This is a Virginia program. That is steady as they come. I mean, this under what Tony Bennett has built there, they don't lose very often, and they don't lose by large margins very often. So getting their butts handed to Notre Dame, a team that lost by 20 to the Citadel 10 days ago, very impressive. Obviously, not probably projecting big things for Notre Dame this season, but if you're a Notre Dame fan and you're seeing kind of what the culture is being built there, got to be so excited. I mean, Mike Shrewsbury, he's the freaking man. And man, it's fun to see a coach just raw emotion, just kind of letting it all out. And it's cool to see the team respond too. So very cool, very good for Notre Dame, getting a huge win over Virginia.
Took Notre Dame until game 6 in the ACC last season to get his first win in the final season on Mike Bray. Game 2 to get to 1-1, but that is still a 6-7 team. This is damning for Tony Bennett's Virginia squad. Notre Dame started this game on a 13-0 run, and Virginia was stifled the rest of the way. The Hoos dropped from 35 to 53 in KenPom as a result of this. That's a yikesy, no doubt about it. How about this? Before Saturday's game, Notre Dame was 3-17 all-time against Virginia, and it had only beaten Virginia once by 5 or more points. Once. And here, a complete domination. According to ESPN stats and information, the 22-point loss here was Virginia's largest conference loss to a sub-500 team since they got dropped by 27 against Clemson in 1965. Gary Parrish was 2 years old when that happened. 1965. So a lot of notoriety coming out of that game here. Tony Bennett's a good in-season adjuster, even though obviously his system is relatively rigid. He is a good motivator. Would almost certainly never have a presser like Shrewsbury. Although if he wants to, Tony, bring it on. I will not fault you whatsoever. Get right game is coming on Wednesday. Virginia will host none other than Louisville before 3 of the next 4 are on the road against NC State, Wake Forest, which looks like it's got some ballers, and then Georgia Tech 2 games after that. Continue the whip around here. Syracuse beats Pitt. GP and I both had Pitt covering here. Blake Hinton, only 11 points. Pitt is a pretender at this point. Yet to log a top 100 win in 2024 arrives in less than 25 hours right now. Cuse, meanwhile, is 10-3. Has only one loss since the second day of Maui. We shall see, but I thought that was an important win for Syracuse. Pitt has nice pieces, and I think that Pitt can actually be the kind of team where we look up Valentine's Day and say, look at Pitt right now. Look at Pitt sitting in fourth in the ACC. I think they have enough on the roster to do that. Just a matter of if they can pull it all together. We'll see if they can. From a resume perspective, we don't have any evidence of that so far. Your thoughts on the Orange winning 81-73 over the Panthers?
Agreed with your thoughts on Pitt. Syracuse, very impressive. They're 10-3 now in the season under Red Autry. They've won 5 straight. They've beat Oregon and Pitt in that span. Really impressed with their guards, Judah Mintz and J.J. Starling, who, of course, was a Notre Dame transfer. Been very productive. We'll wait and see kind of how this plays out because, as you noted, Pitt has underperformed a little bit to this point. But good start to the Red Autry era. Very impressed from Syracuse.
All right, keep kidding. Look at this. I feel like we're cruising on this pod right now. You know, I feel like we're getting results in. We're moving along at a good pace here. I kind of dig it right now.
Let's whip it around.
Anyone is second screening with us, by the way, as they watch this Cowboys-Lions game. Appreciate you. Cowboys up 4 with 1:45 to go. That's your real-time update for anyone listening on the podcast 16 to 24 to 48 hours later. Michigan State got a nice little push from Indiana State. 87-75, though. Sparty won it going away. They had a 13-2 run over the final few minutes late in the second half from like the 6.5-minute mark until about 3 minutes were remaining. That kind of put them with some separation. I went and checked. Somewhat surprised. By the way, what is that noise? Do you have a fog machine going? Is that you or Nada? What is that?
It's not me.
It's not you. Nada, is that you?
Turn the fog machine off.
Nada's mic is always off. That's not you. What is that? Is anyone else, if you're in the chat, do you hear that or am I losing my mind?
I heard it too.
Okay.
It could be our baby tooting in the other room. I'm not sure. Okay. But I don't think so.
Baby farts. Well, you know what? The podcast could use a little baby farts, I guess. Where was I? Okay. So I looked this up. This was only the second meeting ever between these programs. I didn't bring this up on the show when we were previewing it and picking it in the final 4-1. But the only other time that Michigan State and Indiana State ever met was the title game. 1979, the most watched game in the history of college basketball. This feels like a major drop of the ball on both programs' behalf. You're telling me they couldn't have met once in the 1980s ever? But hey, Michigan State's now 2-0 all time against Indiana State. Shouts to Isaiah Swope. He had 26 points in a losing effort. Sycamores need to angle for probably a two-loss most at MVC kind of season if it's going to be in the at-large convo. Saw a lot of chatter on social media about you don't want to see Indiana State in the tournament. First of all, it's December 30th. That's like setting a record. Can we slow it down with nobody wants to see this? That's not allowed until minimally Valentine's Day. Okay. Saw a lot. Heard it on the broadcast. Robbie Hummel, I heard you. I'm calling you out. Great analyst. Can we just tap the brakes? And can we respect Drake? Did we just remove Drake from the tournament conversation? Love the Drake. Don't fade the Drake. Not yet. Credit to Spartans. They were able to rally. And so you know what? They had some good balance there. Tyson Walker had 22. Malik Hall, hey, like to see that, 18. AJ Hogard had a season-high 17. Jaden Akins put up 13. MSU has now won 4 in a row. There's a lot of, you know, haziness with the Big Ten again for the second season in a row. We'll see if Michigan State can really get things going again. Elsewhere, let's talk Pac-12. We mentioned the WCC might be a one-bid league. Pac-12, is this going to be a three-bid league? All right, here's what happened. Friday night, Colorado beats Washington 73-69. KJ Simpson and Eddie Lampkin Jr. both had double-doubles. There was no Tristan DeSilva in this game for Colorado. No Cody Williams. Two other players were out, so they were very shorthanded. It was a well-earned win for Colorado. It's 10-2, and it's 1-5 straight. That's the good point. That's the good part for them. I'm in on Colorado. I said it on the last show there. Plus, when you got, like, you know, Luke O'Brien, Javon Hadley, Julian Hammond, they all added 11. They had really good production, and Washington came ready to play. It was a really fun game. But Arizona, Colorado, and then maybe one of Oregon or Utah, and Utah is going to play on Sunday here. Oregon was able to beat UCLA on CBS on Saturday. It's a nice win for the Ducks. UCLA, it's over the season. I mean, they are permanently out of the at-large conversation. UCLA is 6-7. 6-7, and even if they start doing damage in the Pac-12, what are we talking about? They haven't had a good win since the season started. They still have not acquired it. It's a real problem. As we do this show right now, there's another team, USC, and this game will not end before we do the show. So if they rally, they need to rally just to keep themselves above 500. But USC's down 9 at Oregon State at halftime as we speak right now. So the Pac-12 has not helped itself out in any sort of way here. I think 3 is the most likely outcome for bids. I think 4 will take some luck and is the high end. 2 would stun me. I mean, it would really have to back into something pretty ugly for the Pac-12 to only have 2 bids this season. But I couldn't help but notice with all the doings as league play is really getting going here. Whereas in football, it was arguably the best conference in its final year as we know it. In men's basketball, it's not quite going the same. Elsewhere.
2.5. You taking the over or the under?
I would take the over. Give me 3 bids for the Pac-12. And I would go under 3.5, but I think 4 is on the table. 5 is already gone.
Yeah.
But we will see. Friday night, another result. McNeese State 87, Michigan 76 at Michigan. That's one of the four bad losses this weekend, or the four worst, I guess. FAU at Florida Gulf Coast, Virginia by 22 at Notre Dame, but then there are 2 home ones. Florida State lost to Lipscomb by 3. And then Michigan got dropped by double digits against McNeese State is 11-2. Michigan, like UCLA, 6-7. If it's over for UCLA's at large hopes, it's definitely over for Michigan's, KB.
Yeah, and I was actually prepared to make this is a very strong ass win for McNeese State. It's not like Michigan's just not very good. I guess it's a good win because it's, you know, over a power conference team. But Michigan is just in a tailspin right now. And McNeese State, credit to them, they're 11-2. They rank number 1 in turnover percentage. Shahada Wales, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists in that win. Michigan, just a total dumpster fire right now. 1-2 since Juwan Howard returned. Lone win, of course, in that span. The first game when he returned against Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, that's... It's a problem for Michigan right now. And I watched that team play, and I wasn't big on them going into the season. I didn't think they'd be sub 500 heading into the heart of Big Ten play here. But maize and blue teams, if you will, one in Westwood and one in Ann Arbor. Michigan basketball fans, they're more locked in on their football team getting ready to play a pretty sizable game on Monday night. But once college football season's over, they're going to look up and they're going to see a men's basketball program that is in some disarray right now. Undefeated watch, only three left. Ole Miss will try and continue its run on Sunday against Bryant, but we did get two teams on Saturday that were able to extend it. Houston easily beat Penn to remain undefeated. And then JMU, still undefeated, beat Texas State to move to 13-0. I'm going to give you the floor here for a quick second. James Madison continues to be ranked in the AP Top 25, as it should. Yep. Any thoughts on what the Dukes have been able to do so far on the hardwood this season after obviously having a really, really good college football season?
Not really. I'm impressed with the way that they have started the season, obviously, 13-0. I'm impressed with their roster building, and I think it's possibly predictive of how mid-major teams are going to build in the future. Six of their top nine scorers started their career elsewhere. The other three are upperclassmen, guys who have developed at James Madison, kind of been in the program. So I think Bill Self a few years ago talked a little bit about how the future of college basketball is about, you know, kind of being old and trying to stay old. And I think a lot of coaches have kind of echoed that same sentiment. This team is very experienced. They've got a lot of experience at different programs, and they're coming together. I don't know exactly how good James Madison is going to be this season, but they're one of only two undefeated teams, and it's very impressive what they have been able to do so far.
One thing to keep in mind with JMU, in addition to obviously the undefeated season that they've got going, they're scoring more points than anyone per game, and they're putting up more than 90 a night, and that is a really, really good sign, and it's hard to see how that will drop below, say, 85 when you consider the league that they're going into. Part of the Sun Belt this season, Sun Belt is a middle-of-the-road league, not going to help them from a resume perspective, but if they are able to continue to pile up wins, I'm going to back what I said on a recent episode, that team should be ranked very, very, very high with even one loss, let alone zero. A couple other results from Saturday to get to here. Rutgers almost lost to Stonehill. St. John's escaped Hofstra. Credit to Pitino and his staff. That was the first time they had scheduled a game between those two Long Island-based universities in 14 years. And then, as previously mentioned, Florida State losing to the Lipscomb Bisons. Yes, that is plural. Bisons of Lipscomb there to drop to 6-6. The poll question on this episode was the worst loss of the weekend was, and here are your results as of now. FAU running away with it, 69%. They lost close. Virginia's second place. I think the Virginia loss is worse. Dunk City's a worse team, but Notre Dame's not good. And Virginia, at least like if you watched FAU play, if you watched both the games, Virginia was definitely the worst loss. FSU, by the way, those are both on the road. The teams that lost at home, FSU was 7%, Michigan 7%. You can make a case, I think, for any of those. Although Florida State fans, if you think Michigan fans weren't dialed in the McNeese State game, I got news for you. Florida State fans could not care less at the moment about what the basketball team did after the football team. Oh, that's a tough scene. Oh. That was a tough scene. It was interesting to see a lot of understandable and correct commentary about, because we get this in basketball almost on an annual basis where it's like, if a team does get in or doesn't get in, whatever they do in that first four game, or if they're in, you know, they get in, they dodge the first four and they get absolutely rolled, or if they miss it and then they win or lose in the NIT, what they do after Selection Sunday is not a comment, shouldn't have any sort of impact on whether they deserve to or to not be in. Saw a lot of that with FSU. Unlike the basketball stuff, half the damn FSU team didn't even play.
Yeah. Yeah. 63-3. Unbelievable.
Let me bring up something here real quick. So Florida State's football team, out of 63 points, has it held an opponent? Let's see here. Yes. No, hold on. Have they held an opponent under 63 so far this season? We got 67, 67, 89, 75, 71, 68, 78, 88, 68, 75, 61 to Winthrop a week ago. So only one time this season has Florida State's men's basketball team held its opponent to fewer points than the football team put up on Georgia.
Unreal.
Over under, someone find me after the season. I will definitely forget about this. I'm going to say over under, Florida State men's basketball holds opponents under 63 points. Over, it's happened once. I'm going to say over under 3.5 times. Over under 3.5 times, FSU holds an opponent under 63 in men's basketball. You taking the over or the under? They've done it once. They need to do it three more times at the over.
I think I'll take the over. You ride with me?
I'm not. I'm going to ride. I'm going under. I'll say it happens three times.
What are you, a Georgia fan?
No.
Get out of here.
I'm just going to say, listen, man, check the schedule. They're not keeping Kennesaw State, Central Michigan, North Florida, South Florida. None of them.
You sound like a Georgia fan.
It ain't me, babe. It ain't me. Let's look at some games to know for Tuesday. Sunday's got a couple of Pac-12 affairs. Again, you get your little pod action done. Get ready for your New Year's Eve preparations. And then obviously Monday's all about the CFP semifinals. We'll pick those games in just a minute here. Tuesday games to know. North Carolina plays at Pitt. That's a spicy one. Okay, Pitt, let's see what you can do in that kind of spot here. Butler at St. John's is your sneaky good game of the night. Rick Pitino said after his team dodged the loss at Hofstra, apparently he's going to schedule UConn at Carnesecca next year. Don't really know why this came up, but it made a headline in the New York Post. So there you have it. Long before we get to that day, we've got Butler at St. John's on Tuesday. Purdue plays at Maryland. Purdue, by the way, beat Eastern Kentucky on Friday, 80-53. That was its 35th straight non-conference regular season victory. Cue the FDU. That wasn't in the regular season. According to Purdue, it's the ninth longest streak in NCAA history in the non-con regular season and the second longest streak in Big Ten history. It's the third team in the last 50 years. Syracuse did it from 2010 to 2012, and Duke did it from 92 to 94, according to Purdue, to record three straight unbeaten non-conference regular seasons. This was also Matt Painter's 450th win. Congrats to Purdue. Most people won't care until we get to March. However, this podcast cares, and we're going to give you plenty of credit. Purdue will play at Maryland on Tuesday. Maryland playing better as of late, and here's a wonderful opportunity to see if they can get it done. Elsewhere on Tuesday, KB, New Mexico at Colorado State. Awesome, awesome Mountain West game there to dial into. Northwestern plays at Illinois. Quick update on Illinois. Josh Whitman, the athletic director, did hold a press conference prior to Illinois' win Friday night against Fairleigh Dickinson. He laid out a bit more of the timeline, added some information, I guess as much as he was willing, wanting, or able to. And he did say there was a chance that we would actually have resolution on the status of Terrence Shannon Jr.'s suspension before the legal process would play out. We'll have to see on all of that. But yes, apparently the incident that we opened the show with the other night happened, according to Whitman, it happened in public at a bar where the allegation took place there. We'll have to wait and see on that. No Terrence Shannon Jr. for the short term. A couple more. Syracuse plays at Duke on Tuesday night. Syracuse gets a nice home win. Duke got Tyrese Proctor back on Saturday. I think he played 19 minutes. They had an easy home win against Queens College. We'll wait and see on that. And then the new building's opening up in just a couple of days. Baylor's going to open brand new digs. Can't wait to see what this thing looks like on TV, although it's a bigger moment. We'll be against a more high-profile opponent. Cornell's coming in. Cornell is 10-2, by the way. Good little Ivy League team there. Ivy's got some teams. Yale, Princeton, Cornell. Yes. Keep an eye on that. But that is your Tuesday slate. We are not scheduled to do another live episode until Wednesday morning. To be determined if I can scoot in something in the feed that's a little bit of a end of year present for you or not. We're almost done here, KB. New Year's Eve, though. You got any plans?
I'm going to try to sleep. That's my goal.
That's actually a good call. What are you asking? You're not going anywhere.
No.
Yeah. Last time you went out and socialized on New Year's Eve, maybe it was last year for all I know, but how long has it been?
Shoot. It had to be probably like 2019, maybe 2018.
That's been a minute.
19. Yeah. Because our daughter was born 2020. So yeah. Yeah, wild.
You got a best or worst New Year's Eve memory that you care to share for the public to know? Anything notable over the years? Like break into Oklahoma State's football complex or something?
No.
12 years ago?
Really not that wild. I did go downtown Tulsa probably like 10 years ago now. And we stayed the night at a hotel. And
I can't handle this.
There's like a taxi, takes you around all the bars. some guy jumps in the bus, just barfs all over my my cowboy boots. So I remember that. That was a memorable moment. I'm not much of a troublemaker. I actually enjoy staying in. So,
wow,
it'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a minute. We haven't gone out on New Year's in a few here. I don't think we.
Are you going to go curling on New Year's Eve?
I did go curling.
Yeah.
You saw that. I did go curling on Friday.
How was that?
It was a good time. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law bought me and my wife a night out curling here in Connecticut. You know what? It was legit. I had a fun time.
That's so random. Do you like
it? It is random, but there's like, you know, about, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes from where I live, they've got a curling club. They had I wanted to take a picture of it and I forgot to. They had a Festivus pole in this place. So they, you know, it's definitely a community and culture unto itself. And they do these things, I guess, weekly where, you know, you get a bunch of people that have never done this and either they want to do it or someone's bought them, you know, an hour and a half to learn how to curl and play one match, if you will. And, you know, I gave it a go. It was fun. I would do it again. We got matched up with four 10-year-olds and it came out with a 1-1 tie. Although I will say one of the 10-year-olds, see, when you do the sweeping, right? And allegedly, I learned all sorts of stuff here. First of all, the guy telling me like why you sweep and because it theoretically creates some hydroplaning, but he told me there's actually no science to prove that it actually works. Everyone just does it in curling, which blew my mind. I'm like, wait a second, this isn't based in real, like, proven data and science. He's like, no, but you're not allowed to touch the stone. Otherwise, it's a burnt stone. Telling you, one of those 10-year-olds, they touched the stone on the shot that gave them the win to tie the match at 1-1. I let it slide. Although, you know, I was excited to just give this a go, and everyone had someone who is a member of the curling club and also, like, you know, works for it and can be a teacher or whatever. So we had one guy, and then there's the other guy that was teaching the 10-year-olds, and we match up after we practice, we do all this, and I just go, yeah, hey man, you're going down. Let's go. You're going down. And he goes, yeah, we'll see about that. And I was like, it's just a joke, man. I was just kidding. He was not messing around. I was kidding around. He was not messing around. In fact, at one point, so you switch up between letting the stone go, yep, or like in some, or you got to do the sweeping. Mm-hmm. And if you call the person that yells, I forget what it's called now. I was born to do this, man. I was into it. I was like Will Ferrell, I Drive a Dodge Stratus level intense in that moment. And the guy who I was joking with saying we were going to go down, he comes up to one of my teammates at one point. He goes, stop sweeping. You're not allowed to sweep anymore. Oh my gosh. Who knew? Meanwhile, like the group that's like two rows over, they're having a blast. It's chuckles and laughs. Oh, high fives. I was like, we got stuck with this guy, but it was wonderful. I had a wonderful time. I deserved the rubber match, but we didn't get it done. But anyway, yes, did a little curling on Friday. If you've never done it and you've got something in your area, I would say it's a wonderful thing to go out and try and do with friends. It was a nice little end of year Friday bonus there. So yeah, that was it. I'm not going out on New Year's Eve. In fact, a sign that we're getting old here.
Yeah.
I don't think I know one person that is holding a New Year's Eve party. Normally we had two couples that were in different social circles and knew from different walks of life. And they would always do the New Year's Eve party, but they haven't, each of them, like, stopped doing it. I think with the pandemic and for whatever reason, like, they, also kids are getting a little older, I guess. So yeah, I'm just gonna be chilling at home on Sunday night.
Nice. Yeah. Same. We need to add, by the way,
what do we need to do?
That timestamp. The stop sweeping.
I don't know about that.
That one.
He was coming at it hot, though. I'll just say that.
That's intense.
Yeah, it was intense. By the way, Nada's back. Nada went to London.
Welcome back, Nada.
Yeah. How was London, Nada? Give me a highlight.
It was great. It was great. Highlight going to Craven Cottage and watching Fulham play a game, watching Anthony Robinson do his thing. That was pretty cool. That and getting lost in the tube for a couple of days and just getting lost in London was fairly awesome.
What's the one word in British English that they use over there that you either you knew about it beforehand or you learned it over there and you think it is superior to whatever term or word we use it for it over here in the States?
I can't. You limit me to one word. They're at least like 10 or 11 and it takes too long.
Give me two.
Oh,
is loo better than bathroom? Is loo? I think
absolutely, bathroom, absolutely.
Better? I don't know. Loo sounds a little too frisky for me. I think bathroom's good.
Loo, and then also, I'm not gonna lie. The subway being called the tube.
The tube is good. That's the superior.
That's
term.
The best one. That might be the best one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. What about? Isn't the elevator called the lift? What do they call it? Is that what it is?
The escalator is called the lift.
The escalator is the lift. Okay. Tell you what, they had the better pronunciation for advertisement. Advertisement is so much better.
That's solid. Yeah.
Advertisement is just so much better. So, but glacier, right? Glacier, not glacier, glacier. Yeah. They got a few things on us. Well, welcome back. Yep. We didn't indicate to the audience, but yeah, Nada was out for the past week or so. Appreciation to Josh for stepping in and pinch hitting. Before we get out of here, how about a college hoops resolution, something we'd like to see in the new year. I got one. KB, you got one?
Yeah, I'm not going to take yours. I'll go first.
Yeah, if you take mine, then so be it.
Good, good. I don't have a actual resolution, but...
Okay, that was the conceit of the setup, but okay, sounds good.
I have a resolution. I don't have a way to solve my resolution. I would like fewer late game reviews.
That's a good one.
The old man in me.
That's a great one.
Way too much college basketball games where I can watch 2 40-minute halves go by and it's mostly breezy. And then the last 2 minutes feels like, oh my gosh, another review. Oh my gosh, another review. So old man yells at cloud. I don't have an answer on how to fix it, but that would be my request for college basketball.
My resolution, these are things I would like college basketball to resolve to do, to fix, to change, to be better in the new year. I would like the powers that be to resolve in the year 2024 to stay at a 68 team NCAA tournament. I think there's a chance that we will get, one way or the other, we will get an update on this. Whether they decide to expand or not to expand, there will be news that emanates. I don't know for sure if it will happen in 2024. It will happen, in my opinion, no later than 2025. But I would like it for it to come out as soon as possible in 2024 that they're going to stay at 68 as they continue to mull over the pros and cons. And to me, it's mostly cons. We will see on that. Also, the podcast will resolve for two things in the new year. We will have new podcast artwork. The one that is on your phone has been was put there as a temporary one. I don't know, 4 years ago. So we're going to get something a little bit snazzier that's coming. And we will have a new, as longtime listeners are aware of, the podcast intro is like Doctor Who. It is regenerated every couple of years. Ever since I started this podcast I technically started this podcast pre-CBS, but ever since it's been brought over to CBS, the podcast intro has changed every 1.5 to 3 years. The song has been picked out and it will be debuting at some point in January, Lord willing, sooner than later, I hope, but that is coming.
Is it a jingle? Is it a jingle or is it?
I would not say it is a jingle.
Okay.
I would say it might be for lovers, though. I might say that.
I might
just say that. Last one. Let's pick these CFP semifinals and then we can get out of here. So Monday, 5:30 Eastern. I didn't prep it. The Vince Young Stadium. Why not? In the Vince Young Bowl. Alabama versus Michigan. 4-seed Alabama, 1-seed Michigan. I don't have the line in front of me. We're picking these straight up.
Michigan -1.5.
You got the lines.
Yes.
Who you got?
Yeah, I'm going to take Alabama. I'm going to take Alabama straight up. They're going to win by 12 over Michigan.
Give us a score if you're going to say 12.
Let's go. It's going to be 30-18. Alabama wins.
30-18. All right. I will go. I think pretty objectively, Michigan's been the better team this season, right?
Yes.
What's the funniest outcome? Is the funniest outcome like Bama 28-7?
No, the funniest outcome is probably Michigan getting Georgia'd, just like 63-3.
You're probably right.
Alabama runs it up.
I will say this, and I truly do not care who wins. I have such Alabama success fatigue that Michigan winning just, it's more variety, and Michigan's been good as of late, but you know what I'm saying. You've got Bama. I'll take Michigan. Give me Michigan 24-21. Game two, approximately 8:45 Eastern from the Joe Burrow Superdome after what LSU did there a few years back. I'll give him the that's where the game is, right? Yeah, it's in New Orleans.
That's right.
What's the line?
Texas minus -4.
Okay, who you got?
Give me Washington, underdog. I'm gonna ride with the Huskies. I like what I've seen from Michael Penix. He's nice. I like him a lot. I like him.
By the way, if you're looking for a real, actual analysis, Tom Fornelli, Chip Patterson, Bud Elliott, Danny Cannell, the Cover 3 crew, please go find the podcast. They'll have it covered wall to wall. They've got more than enough college football coverage for you. If you have not already found those fine gents, please go find the Cover 3 podcast. I have no idea if they ever plug and push Ion College Basketball, but I know I give them love a couple times a year.
They don't.
Chip occasionally comes on the pod, and that's more than enough for me.
Right.
I'm going to be with you here.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Washington. I've watched them play a few times this season. I very much enjoy the way they play. I love their wide receivers. And Penix is by no means a perfect quarterback, but good Lord, he is good for a couple throws every single game. Like, my God.
Dude, have you seen Romo do
in Indiana? You know?
Have you watched Odunze?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. He's incredible.
He is incredible.
It's so much fun to watch.
Phenomenal player. Love watching him. So I will take... I'll take Washington to cover. I'll take them to win. I'll say Washington. Give me Washington 38-31.
Oh, shootout. Okay. I'll go Washington 35, Texas 30. Yeah.
All right, there we go. Well, it's a fun one, too. College football playoff is going into it each year. There's always plenty of excitement. This feels like, before we go to 12 teams, this feels like a top three semifinal duo that we've had since they started doing this thing. So, and that'll be Monday night. So you get a little Sunday, New Year's Eve. Rest and recover. Monday, January 1. Get those resolutions in. All right. I think everyone, listeners, you should resolve to rate and subscribe. 5 stars only. Okay. And subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Please do that if you could. We appreciate everything that you've done to help us out this year. And GP and I will definitely be back no later than Wednesday morning. And if anything warrants an episode before then, hey, fun little surprise. KB, thanks for hopping on and joining me, bud. I appreciate it.
Glad to join you. Happy New Year's, everyone.
Happy New Year. Thank you for helping make 2023 the biggest year yet for the Eye on College Basketball podcast. Please stay safe. Enjoy your Sunday on this final day of 2023. And we will almost certainly talk to you in 2024. Until then,
bye.
Happy New Year.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.